Welcome to the Built on Purpose podcast, where on each episode, we interview exceptional leaders, entrepreneurs, authors, philosophers, and some straight up interesting people to explore their outlook on life, work, and leadership. And now, here's your host, CEO and co-founder of Y Scouts, Max Hansen.
Welcome back to episode 76 of the Built on Purpose podcast, brought to you by Y Scouts. I'm your host, Max Hansen, the CEO of Y Scouts, where we find purpose-aligned and performance-proven leaders. Speaking of, today our guest is Jamie Pearson, President and CEO of Bang Inc. Jamie, welcome to the podcast.
Hi, thanks for having me. Glad to be here.
Let's start out, as we always do on this podcast, just to make sure we give some airtime to the wonderful companies you guys are representing or the folks on here representing. But tell us about Bang, where are you guys currently at in your evolution? What's your current footprint, product lines, where you operate? I know you guys are in Canada and some European countries, but let's start there just so we can kind of make sure we shout out to Bang to start.
Well, thanks. This is that piece where you're supposed to have your elevator pitch all, you know, buttoned up. So I have some of it buttoned up. Bang is considered really an OG cannabis company in the truest sense of the word. We were born in Oakland, California, 12 years ago. And in cannabis years, which we all laugh is kind of like dog years, 12 years old is a long, long, long time to be in cannabis. I've been with the company 7 years. I've been the CEO 2.5 years. We went public on the Canadian Securities Exchange in 2019 under the symbol BHNG. Right now, we are currently operating in 7 U.S. states and in Canada through licensing agreements. November of last year, we signed an 11-state deal with Trulieve, which is kind of the biggest, baddest cannabis company in the world. They've got 160 retail locations in 11 states. They've been profitable for 16 quarters, run by Kim Rivers, a really badass woman CEO, probably somebody you should have on your podcast if you can, because she's pretty crazy, amazing. And we have our CBD line in, it's in 9 European countries, but I say that and I want to kind of clarify that because Europe was really shut down during COVID. So I went back, gave the keynote in Barcelona a couple months ago at Spanibus, for the International Cannabis Business Conference. They do the investment arm prior to Spanibus to get that European business back open. But all in all, cannabis is a hard industry. And, you know, I'm proud to be Bang and proud of what we've built because, you know, we're still here alive and kicking and doing the deal.
Love it. Love it. When I first discovered your brand, I saw the statement, and you just say what it means to you, but Bang makes the fairly enjoyable ridiculously fun. I think I know what that means. But what is that? How do we interpret that?
You know, we're known for being irreverent, being a little bit of a joker or, you know, a trailblazer, and kind of, we have a little bit of an FU vibe, and it's, you know, really comes from Scott Van Rixel, our founder. You just don't ask permission. You just go blaze the trail. And part of doing that is just being bold and taking risks. And that's what Bang's known for. So, you know, part of it is that a lot of companies tiptoe. They want to kind of figure out how things work. And we don't do that. We kick the door in. And that's what that means is, if you're going to do cannabis, it better be fun. We're doing cannabis chocolate and everything that we do. We try to really do it with that OG flavor, letting people know, look, we know cannabis. We know it better than anybody. Our products are delicious. They're unapologetic. And, you know, we're not out here tiptoeing. We're out here blazing trails and kicking doors down.
Love it. I love it. And I will attest their products are very good. Yeah. Bang, you've been a recipient of 10 Cannabis Cup Awards. What do you attribute, you know, some of what you said, I think will be some of this answer, but what do you attribute being such an award-winning brand to?
Well, I want to preface it by saying a lot of brands will, you know, tout how many awards they've won. A lot of what happens in cannabis is pay to play. Well, if you write a $20,000 check, you get to quote unquote win. We don't ever enter those kinds of contests. And so the cannabis cups that we've won have been won fair and square where the judging was either blind or it was people's choice. And that means that you put the product in their hands, you let them try it, you go up against your competition, and we win because our product tastes like chocolate and it tastes like gourmet chocolate and not like cannabis. And most of our competitors haven't figured that out. So you always have this either bitter aftertaste or you have a tinge of that grassy cannabis flavor. In our product, you just taste chocolate. That's why we win consistently. And, you know, stands to reason, our formulas were developed by a master chocolatier. He had 25 years of putting gourmet chocolate in Whole Foods and Dean and DeLuca before he got into cannabis. What usually happens is cannabis is a cash grab. People think they're going to get in and get rich quick. Our founder was a chocolate expert. And what he was trying to do was create a safe, effective, consistent product for people who were at the time were using it for medical reasons. And he wanted them to have a consistent dose and something that was both delicious and reliable. And, you know, he got it done.
It's awesome. Let's jump into, tell us about your path into cannabis. I think it's obviously super interesting. I'm sure you've told the story many times, but for those listening that have not heard the story, and plus I align to it. So we'll get into kind of the, you know, kind of coming from the athletic side of things, but how did you get into the cannabis business?
It's kind of a two-part story. Part one is my dad is a two-time Vietnam vet. He has PTSD. He doesn't drink, and he's always used cannabis to make him feel better. And back, you know, I'm 52. So, you know, back in the 70s and 80s, when the Reagan war on drugs came into effect, it really just meant that he had to grow his own product and we had to be quiet because you risk life and liberty to grow cannabis back in those days. So I grew up around cannabis. My dad always had cannabis and grew it. And it was just part of our life. My parents tell a funny story about me walking out the door for kindergarten. I live three doors down from the school and they say, "What are you taking for show and tell?" And I hold up my dad's pipe and I said, "Daddy's pipe." And, you know, that's a memory from kindergarten. So it's been part of my life forever. And then on my mom's side, DJ Muggs from Cypress Hill is my first cousin. So when I was in law school, he lit a joint on Saturday Night Live and their documentary just aired on Showtime and it's incredible. So I urge everyone that's listening to go watch that. You can watch it on Amazon. But it was like growing up and having the poster children of the legalization, you know, movement. That was my cousin. And the reality was I never used cannabis and wasn't a fan. I was a basketball player. I played in high school, played in college, and I played on the US team. And I didn't have really any interest in doing drugs. I was all about fitness and health and all those things. And then, you know, the joke's on me. What I realized later when Muggs asked me to help Cypress find a deal, which I found Bang and the rest is history. That was about 8 years ago. One of the things I did for Bang is I took over the website email. So people that would email us. And I started getting these messages from people that said, "Oh, my wife has had debilitating migraines her whole life. And she got her first good night's sleep last night. Your product is a miracle," or, you know, fill in the blank, all of these incredible stories. And I'm sitting there reading these thinking, oh, this isn't a bunch of people just getting stoned. And then like this weird aha moment happened, because that really wasn't my dad's experience either. And it wasn't my experience growing up with a dad who used cannabis. It was that he was a fully functional, highly functional business owner. And cannabis just helped him not be, you know, on edge with suffering PTSD and anxiety and the things that, you know, and I don't pretend to walk a mile in his shoes and know what he suffers from. But what I know is that a lot of people contact Bang and say, "Your product helps me do," and whatever, fill in the blank, sleep, anxiety, even if it's just a social lubricant. So I really, you know, they say you get smart, your parents get smarter as you get older. And I definitely look back and think, I was unnecessarily judgmental. I bought into the stigma and now I'm definitely a proponent. I tell everybody with pride what I do, and I'm out working to fight the stigma because I do think cannabis is better than alcohol, and that it should be legal.
I love it. I love it. There's so much there, to unpack. I'll change gears and we'll kind of come back to that, but I want to make sure we talk about it because we started to talk about it before we started recording here. Talk about the significance of being named to High Times Female 50 and delivering the keynote speech there, as well as speaking at Spanibus. Is that pronounced right? And then recently you spoke at the United Nations just recently for Genibus. Talk about what that means to you and how that experience was. I'm very anxious to hear myself, and I think the audience is too.
Well, obviously it's a huge honor. I was named, you know, one of the High Times, I think I was named one of the 20 most influential women the year before, and then the female 50. And when they asked me to give the keynote, I was honored. And there were like 2,500 people in the room. It was pretty crazy. One of those kind of unforgettable life experiences. It meant a lot to be recognized. And one of the things that I said in my speech was that I look forward to that day when women get recognized as leaders and not women leaders, you know, because we're hiring and firing and managing cash and doing what everyone else is doing. We just happen to have different genitalia. But at the same time, it's also understandable that they're recognizing that it is harder to be a leader as a woman. You don't have the role models, you don't have the connections, you know, you're not part of the good old boys club. And that stuff really does exist. So it's a huge honor. And what it means, though, is that I get asked to do things and I get asked to mentor people and to speak at things like this. And there's a responsibility to be a good representative of the industry. And so I take it very seriously. I always want to be a good steward of that power, so to speak. And so what I try to do is give access to other women and to people of color and do whatever I can do to kind of level the playing field for all of us.
Love it. Love it. And the title of that speech, I read through it, was Breaking the Glass Ceiling for the Female 50. Can you summarize the essence of the speech for our audience, for those that didn't have a chance to either read it or listen to it?
Yeah. You know, Parade Magazine, that little circular that gets put into the Sunday paper. Another kind of surprise for me was that one of the lines from that speech, they had put the 100 most famous quotes from women. And I was like, before Oprah and after Madeleine Albright or something like that, just crazy. And the quote from that speech was that the notion of a glass ceiling only exists if women are complicit. And part of that means, and the crux of the speech was that we have an obligation and a duty in prohibition in cannabis to make the industry look any way we want. And that means that it should be inclusive. So we have a duty to make it inclusive. And then the other piece of that is that the fact of the matter is that we don't have to agree to the glass ceiling. If we don't get offered a chair at the table, what we need to do is just pull up our own chair if we're not offered a seat. So the reality here is, I think it's easier said than done. And I also want to acknowledge my privilege because I do know that as a white woman with a father who was an entrepreneur, I probably have a mindset and access to things that other people don't. But I will say that I just didn't accept no for an answer at any phase of my life. Being a basketball player, I'd go play pickup and guys would be like, they don't want me to play. And I'd be like, yeah, you don't have a choice. I'm playing. And that's just kind of how I am. I'm just a little bit, I think, forceful. And that's from having parents that said, you can do anything you want to do. And I believed them.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And you talked about, I think when you and I talked briefly before, you talked about being part of the roots of the suits. And obviously, you know, you view yourself as coming in on the suits side for the obvious reasons of where you came from in school and, you know, different business. But talk about, you know, talk about kind of how you see that, like the two different, like kind of the OGs and then the business people that came in later on.
Yeah, sure. It comes up a lot and there's still a lot of tension. You know, when I think about the roots, I think about the 40,000 Black and Brown people that are sitting in prison. We built this industry on their courage, on their leadership, on their backs, literally. I think about the people that were hiding from helicopters when they were planting, you know, seeds up in the hills of Humboldt. And I think about the people in BC, Canada that were growing cannabis and Making sure all of those people were making sure that human beings had access to the plant. And the interesting thing about that is when you drink alcohol or use any kind of cocaine or any of those kinds of drugs, they're poison. So your body gets rid of them. So you sit in a sauna the day after going on a bender and you stink like a brewery, but you can test positive for cannabis 30 days after you use it because your body hangs on to it because you have an endocannabinoid system and you need it. And so I think about these roots doing what needed to be done so that people had access to the plant all of these years later during prohibition. And then I think about the suits, and there is this disconnect because the roots go, oh, you guys are here because it's a cash grab. But I always say, hey, we're still in federal prohibition. So the suits that are coming are also a little edgy. They're showing up. It's not quite legal. It is, we don't have banking. We can't buy AdWords on Facebook. There's still a stigma. So the suits that are showing up maybe didn't dedicate their life to it. But they're still either a proponent of the plant or they have their own cannabis story. And they're here to help maybe get us across that finish line of legalization. And then the other thing that happens is I tell the suits, don't make the assumption that the roots don't know how to run a business, because believe me, they have a lot to teach us. They were running a business when it was much, much harder to get around the law. So they were having to figure out all of the things that we figure out in business, how to get their product to market, how to get it in the customer's hands, how to build customer loyalty, how to manage money, how to pay employees, how to carve out territories, all of those things, all of the things that the roots were doing, the suits are doing just in two completely different environments. And the suits have a lot to learn from the roots on that regard, but also about cannabis, because those roots have been doing it for years. So I just feel like there needs to be just an open pathway on both sides of the aisle. And I do think that the legal market won't thrive as quickly if they don't embrace the roots and the legacy market. And I think if we do, and if we all, you know, join hands, sing kumbaya, get along, everyone will do better and we'll get there faster.
Absolutely. And speaking of the roots, it's worth noting you guys, as well as my company as well, partner with the Last Prisoner Project to give back with the cause of getting out. Hopefully it's less than 40,000, but 40,000 people that are in prison for really selling the same plant that we're all involved with now. So I just want to kind of note that again. We've talked about it. Andrew D'Angelo was on the podcast. We talked in depth, but I want to point that out. Also, I want to talk about your background as an athlete. I think when you and I talked, I played college baseball and coached a lot of basketball. Selfishly, I want to dig into this because I think really learning about people's different paths coming in. And I've interviewed a lot of people, from Keith Strope, from one of the founders of Normal, to, you know, just about anybody. I don't get to talk to a lot of other athletes that are now in cannabis. So how did, and for you to note, I did a little research, and this is a pretty badass basketball player, two-time all-tournament team selection for Vassar, played on the USA basketball team. Tell us how athletics shaped you as a person and as a leader today.
Oh, I mean, playing a team sport is one of those things where when you have a team and it gets in that zone and you're firing on all cylinders and you practice, and then it all comes together in a game, you build some cellular and muscle memory that is pretty spectacular. And I really am more comfortable being part of a team. Playing basketball, I was a point guard. So I was the coach on the floor, so to speak. I called the plays. I was the quarterback, whatever you want to call it. And so I'm comfortable both in a team environment, and also I'm comfortable leading teams of women. And that's, you know, because I always played on a team of women, strong women at that. I think it made me who I am. It shaped who I am for sure. And then also just having all of those amazing coaches that were constantly pushing you to go beyond what you thought your body could do or what you thought your mind could do, or having relationships battle tested, trusting people and having them make that final shot or make the good pass. So I love athletics. Both my kids are athletes, and I think it's a huge part of who I am. Huge, huge part. I'm grateful for it.
Awesome. And what was it like, just kind of doing like the knowing geography a little bit? So you grew up in a small town in Montana, right? Or you still live in Montana? And so then you go to Vassar in New York. What was that transition like? I mean, two very different places.
Oh boy. There were literally not a single person of color or Jewish person in my town, to the point where I knew they existed, but I didn't. I knew people of color existed. I didn't know what it meant to be Jewish. I had no idea what that meant. So I got to Vassar. It was 65% Jewish. My roommate was a Black woman from Harlem. And, you know, what I will tell you is I came in with complete ignorance, which I think was a blessing, because I didn't come in with any kind of prejudice about or a preconceived notion. So I was just really curious and interested, and gained a lot from that experience. I think what it did is it taught me about the value of difference. And that's one of the things at Bang, you know, I wanted to have a diverse executive team and a diverse board, because that experience at Vassar taught me that, you know, the world is full of all kinds of people, rich, poor, fat, thin, tall, short, brown, black, yellow, female, male, and all the genders in between. All of them have a different perspective. Everybody of all walks of life uses cannabis, and we're better when we can get that diversity of thought implemented in making strategies and making plans. So it all kind of dovetails together. It was in hindsight, I look back and I think I was either just ignorant or bold, because I just was like, okay, whatever, New York, here I come. And I just didn't know what I was getting myself into. And I think if I had known, maybe I wouldn't have gone. I would have picked a safer path, but the safer path has never been what I've aspired to, and it's never been what I've done. So I kind of feel like I landed in cannabis. I landed at Vassar. I landed in Europe, and all the places that I've been, or the UN, just by virtue of that acceptance of all human beings. I think people really resonate with me and know that I really love people and respect culture and respect difference. And then I'm just curious. I like learning, and I'm, you know, excited to constantly learn more and grow as a human being.
I love it. I love it. There's a lot of overlap in my life as well. I went to upstate New York to coach basketball at a Jewish camp, and I was one of the only non-Jewish people there. And I had met. I'm in Arizona, but you definitely, I know what you're saying. It opens up your perspective. And the year I was there, Jerry Garcia died, and we were kind of by Woodstock up in upstate New York.
Yeah.
So I remember it vividly, like that whole memory. I was in college at the time, but. Yes, I mean, that upstate New York and the state of New York is a culture experience for sure. You also went on to play for Team USA, and I think didn't you play on a FedEx team in the Soviet Union? I think you briefly. Tell us about that experience. I'm curious to wonder what that's like to represent the United States.
A huge honor. I just found, we cleaned out the barn here at the ranch. And I found my jerseys from that trip to the Soviet Union. And it was before the wall came down. So it was during perestroika, and we had, you know, people following us and all kinds of crazy stuff happening. And it was a great experience, huge honor, of course, a lot of responsibility. And what struck me from that experience is, we played in four different cities in the Soviet Union, and we got the women that we played against. We couldn't communicate, but we could. And we had some things in common that you could just recognize. And it was whether it was defensive footwork or, you know, a great no look pass or whatever it was there. You have this unwritten respect for one another. And what you come away with is realizing it doesn't matter what jersey they have on. They're people, they have families, they have people cheering for them in the stands, and just like we did. And I think travel does that in general, is it gives you an appreciation that everybody on this planet wants the same thing for themselves. You know, we all want to thrive and love and be loved and be connected. And human beings really crave connection. And that experience was, it was eye-opening for sure. It was another amazing experience that I've had in my life. I consider myself so blessed. It's sometimes good to take stock, you know?
Absolutely. Absolutely. That was probably fun finding your jerseys and going through those memories. Talk about your career path in real estate. How did it prepare you for the cannabis industry? I mean, the few times I've interacted with you and just seeing what you've been able to do is really moving. You're just a wonderful leader, but tell us, like, how did the prior experience before cannabis, how did that prepare you for what you're dealing with now as a leader?
Well, for sure. And I'll tell you, leadership's difficult. Like right now I've got, you know, members of my team, you know, telling me that I'm, you know, doing this and that wrong and micromanaging and, you know, those comments are wake up calls for me that, you know, I need to, get in touch with them. And I think that was what I learned in real estate is that every single time that you're interacting, whether you've got somebody working for you or you're working for somebody, it requires constant checking in and people will tell themselves their own stories. So you got to get ahead of that and change the story from the story they're telling themselves or that you're telling yourself to getting aligned on what actually is happening. A lot of that just is taking a moment to slow down and communicate. It's hugely important. And then the other piece of that for real estate for me is that if you have a good deal, you will always be able to find the money. But there's also a point in time where you can try to push a deal beyond its limits. And so part of the strategy of deal making is understanding the right time and the right exit. So I always bought real estate with the exit in mind. So if I bought a house that, you know, for example, was historic, had quarter sawn oak fireplace and all of the light fixtures have been completely refabricated to the original, probably not going to be a good rental. But if I have a house in a blue collar neighborhood and, you know, has the basics, everybody wants 4 bedrooms, 3 bathrooms and a 2-car garage. And it's got all of that, probably a bulletproof rental. And then you got to buy it right. But in those two sets of extremes, what you have to understand is you don't put a cheap countertop in the high-end rental or high-end property, and you don't put a granite countertop in the bulletproof rental. So you also have to know the right elements to add to enhance whatever it is that you're doing, and then understand who your end buyer is. And what I realized in running this company, capital markets was new for me. I hadn't run a public company before. And it took me a good year to get my feet under me. And a lot of it was just understanding what were the, you know, what would all these terms mean? You know, I'd be sitting in meetings and they'd be talking about, oh, we're going to have a half a warrant coverage. And I'd be on my phone like Wikipedia or Investopedia. What's a warrant? You know, and both areas never stop learning because in real estate, I was constantly taking classes, learning how to do lease options, learning how to buy, fix and flip with no money, whatever those things were. What I realized is capital markets are exactly the same thing. There are distressed assets. You can have good fundamentals. You can have the right things wrong with things. But ultimately, if you've bought something or if you have control of an asset that is undervalued, there's always a buyer and there's always money. You just have to figure out how to find it.
I love it. I love it. And also take us back a little bit. You know, we talked about the dog, it being like dog years in cannabis. I think what's interesting about your story is the fact that you live in Montana. So when you first started working in cannabis, you still lived in a small town in Montana, and there were still, you know, people with the stigma that maybe just because they're a little bit behind the curve when it comes to legalization. In fact, I think they're legal as of last year, right? Tell me about what that was like. I mean, I'm sure people are like, hey, here's this, you know, you're in the weed business. Interesting. I'm sure not everybody was accepting and you had to overcome, you know, some people that didn't quite see around the corner yet.
Oh, for sure. So the interesting thing is I live in Billings, Montana, which is the biggest city. I was born and raised in Absarokee, which it's a little town of 800, about an hour away. I raised my kids here. And the first 3 or 4 years that I was working for Bang, I didn't tell people what I did because Bang isn't in Montana. So my business was not here at all. And I was embarrassed or unsure of how my kids would be treated. And I didn't want there to be any blowback on them. And then, you know, as I told you earlier in the conversation, as I started to understand that the majority of people who are buying into the stigma consider cannabis a gateway drug, what they didn't understand is cannabis is a gateway to wellness, and that the communities that have cannabis are actually benefiting from reduced drinking and driving, reduced opiate addiction, reduced domestic violence, and actually an increase in the onset age that people are first using cannabis. It's growing. So you aren't seeing 13-year-olds buying cannabis in the middle school bathroom. They're in legal states. They go get it in a dispensary. It's lab tested and it's safe, and they're not able to buy it in the middle school bathroom anymore. And so actually the legalization of cannabis is helping communities. And so what I had to start doing is saying, you know, this isn't about that anymore. My kids graduated from high school, and then it was time for me to just be out and loud and proud. And every opportunity I have when I'm in Montana, I educate people about what I do. But there are people who treat me like a leper, and that is just the facts. They see me, they pretend like they don't see me, they run in the other direction. I get it, and I see that, and it's okay. And I get that small town politics is very conservative here, and I'm, you know, effectively doing something that conservatives are afraid of, and that they don't like. And so, my high school classmates and the people that are still, kind of caught up in all of that nonsense, I just give them grace because, you know, they'll come along, it'll happen. And the truth is, the majority of them are using cannabis in the closet anyway. They just don't want people to know. And as soon as the stigma's gone and they can all come out of the closet, that happens. And then we all have a good laugh. But usually it's like, oh, I didn't know you use cannabis. And now I'm realizing, oh, they probably all do, because most of them do.
Speaking of using cannabis, when was the first time you started using cannabis? Obviously, since you're an athlete, it just wasn't your thing. You were around it because of your dad. But like, when was the first time you said, I'm going to use this, and like, for what purposes do you use cannabis now?
Well, I tried it. We had a Red Hot Chili Peppers played at Vassar my senior year, and I tried it, but I don't think I figured it out. you know, cause I can't really recollect anything. So it didn't have that much of an effect on me. But I would say the first time that I really remember using it was, 2012. I was in my 40s. I got food poisoning. I was vomiting at a family wedding, and my nephew literally pulled me behind the barn and said, you're going to smoke this and it'll make you stop throwing up and you'll feel a lot better. And I was like, oh, I don't know. I used it. I stopped throwing up instantly and immediately got paranoid. So I went to bed. I skipped the wedding and went to bed. But it was remarkable. The 1 minute to the next, couldn't keep food down to nausea gone. That was an eye opener. And then the next time I used it was probably some event that I was at with Bang, and also got paranoid, and then started educating myself. And now I know that there are certain strains, if they're high in beta carophylline, I'm probably going to get paranoid. So those indica heavy strains, the Kushes, those aren't for me, but the ones that are high in myrcene and limonene, the lemon haze or Jack Hare, kind of anything that's like high in a lemon note, I do well on those. And so what I found, my top strain is Maui Wowie or Sour Maui, which is a cross between Sour Diesel and Maui Wowie, where it makes me feel euphoric, takes away my pain. And I don't feel, I don't get the munchies, and I don't feel paranoid. And what happens when I use cannabis is I usually have some epiphanies. It takes me into a higher consciousness. I find deeper empathy and I still don't use it regularly because I, you know, I don't want to drive impaired and I want to be sharp, and I'm running a public company that, you know, I have people in Pacific time zone. I have people that call me from Europe, and I just want to always be able to be articulate and have a good sharp thought. But when I do use it, I always think, dang, I should do that more. That was great. So I'm still a weirdo trying to figure it out. I'm an imperfect person, but I'm learning.
I think you're, I think a lot of us are in that same, do you feel like, I know this is kind of a big question. Do you feel like you found your purpose leading Bang?
Oh, that is a good question. No, I don't think so. I think that Bang served its purpose for me in the sense that it brought me into cannabis and taught me as a person, that I'm stronger and smarter and more powerful than I thought. Because I had some self-esteem issues that I was, dealing with. And I think, I have a CEO coach, she calls it the imposter syndrome. And I had to confront some of that stuff head on. What I've learned from this is that every single person is fighting their own demons. Every single person has strengths and talents and things to offer. And that a good leader, brings out the best in all of those people. And I don't think I'm done. I think that Bang's been great, and I want to get Bang to a place where it will survive without me. And I think then I've done my job. And I don't know if I'll ever find my purpose, because I'm always going to continue to grow and evolve. But I do think that I'm where I belong at this very moment.
Awesome. Thanks for sharing that. One more topic and then I'll start wrapping up, just because I want to make sure that we're cognizant of the time. You talked a little bit about speaking of learning, and you belong to a peer group, the Female Mafia. I belong to a forum, YPO forum. I'm comparing it kind of similar to the two. Talk about what significance that has had, you know, on your path and for you guys as a group, you gals, I should say, as a group, in helping you along your journey, overcome and continuing to lead.
Well, I call it the Female Mafia. We call ourselves the cohort. It's a bunch of women CEOs, all across investment, data, brands, MSOs, a little bit of everything, science minds, retail minds. And we get together once a month for 4 hours. We have a very structured format so that everybody, you know, gets heard, and that we check in. And it's been a couple of years, so it's been really interesting to watch people go through different things. What I found is that we all go through similar issues, lack of access to capital, being patted on the head, figuratively, when you're the smartest person in the room sometimes, and, you know, people discount you. All of us are dealing with those same things. So then you don't feel like it's personal. That has helped me grow a lot, realizing that some of the challenges I'm going through are not personal to me. And then the other piece is just having that support network of peers that are going through those things that I go through. And then where I can offer someone assistance, it's always great to be able to help somebody when they're struggling, especially somebody you've grown to, you know, love and care about. So the group's been amazing. It's been that place where you're peers, but you mentor people and then you get mentored. It's been fantastic for my personal development. We do a retreat once a year, and that retreat's coming up. I'm really looking forward to having some quality time with these women, because they fill my cup, and I always come away feeling restored and ready to conquer the world again. It's been transformative for my career, for sure.
Awesome. Awesome. Well, I could, this conversation, this has been amazing. Thank you for sharing everything. For the sake of time, there's so much more to talk about. I'm glad we were able to talk about the things we did. One last thing, where, I don't want to be wrong on the domain, but where do we find Bang products, just to kind of on the tail end of this, so people know where to find you and your in the company and your products?
Our website's Bang Nation, and you can also purchase CBD at bangcbd.com, and Bang is spelled with an H, B-H-A-N-G. So the website's bangnation.com. And then our ticker symbol is BHNG on the CSE. And then on the OTC, if you have TD Ameritrade or Charles Schwab, I think you can trade in the US at BHNGF for foreign.
Awesome. Yeah. Well, thanks. Thanks very much. You've been listening to the Built on Purpose podcast brought to you by Y Scouts. I'm Max Hansen. You can find all of our past and future podcasts at yscouts.com.
Thanks for listening to the Built on Purpose podcast, where on each episode we interview exceptional leaders, entrepreneurs, authors, philosophers, and some straight up interesting people to explore their outlook on life, work, and leadership. You can hear any of our previous shows 24/7 wherever you get your podcasts.